Remembers me. Cool.
We pushed past Bob and found the computer exactly where Mooner had left it on the coffee table.
When's a little dude get out of school? Mooner asked.
2:30. Mooner flopped onto the couch. What are you doing? I asked him.
Waiting.
I decided some time ago that Mooner fell into the pet category. He was like a stray cat that showed up on your doorstep and stayed for a few days and then wandered off. He was amusing in small doses, fairly harmless, and for the most part, housebroken. I left Mooner on the couch and went to the kitchen to check out the contents of Morelli's refrigerator. It was noon, and as long as I was there, I figured I might as well eat. If I'd been in my house, I would have made a peanut butter sandwich. But this was Morelli's house, and he was a meat guy, so I found deli-sliced ham and roast beef and Swiss cheese. I made a sandwich for me and a sandwich for Mooner, and I dragged a big bag of potato chips out of the cupboard. I put it all on the small kitchen table and called Mooner in.
Thanks, Mom, Mooner said, sitting down, dumping some chips onto his plate. This is, like, excellent.
I ate half a sandwich, and I realized Bob was at the table, and he was holding a man's shoe in his mouth. It was a scuffed brown lace-up shoe, and I didn't recognize it as Morelli's. I looked under the table at Mooner's feet. Both of them were stuffed into beat-up sneakers. Where'd Bob get the shoe? I asked.
He brought it up from the basement, Mooner said. The door's open.
I turned and looked behind me, and sure enough, the basement door was open. I got up and cautiously peeked down the stairs. Hello? I called. No one answered. I took the carving knife out of the butcher block knife caddy, switched the light on in the basement, and carefully crept down the stairs and looked around.
What's down there? Mooner wanted to know.
Furnace, water heater, and a dead guy.
Bad juju, Mooner said.
The dead guy was spread eagle on his back, eyes wide open, hole in the middle of his forehead, lots of blood pooling under him, wearing only one shoe. I didn't recognize him. He looked like he came out of central casting for a Sopranos episode. I took a moment to decide if I was going to throw up or faint or evacuate my bowels. None of those things seemed to be going on, so I stumbled up to the kitchen, closed the basement door behind me, and dialed Morelli. There's a dead guy in your basement, I told him. Silence. Did you hear me? I asked, working hard to control the shaking in my voice.
I know this is stupid, but it sounded like you said there was a dead guy in my basement.
Shot in the forehead. Bob took his shoe and won't give it back.
Have you called the police?
Just you.
You know it would be good, Mooner said when I hung up. Coleslaw. I don't suppose you have any coleslaw.
No.
Just thought I'd ask.
Aren't you bothered by the fact that someone was killed in Morelli's basement? I asked Mooner.
Do I know him?
I don't know. Do you want to take a look? Mooner stood and ambled down the stairs. Moments later, he strolled back into the kitchen and took a handful of chips.
Don't know him,
he said, finishing his sandwich, eating his chips. I wasn't nearly so calm. I don't like dead people, and I especially hated that someone was killed in Morelli's house. It felt unclean and scary, and like the house had been violated. Mooner had taken a lawn chair from Morelli's backyard and set it on the sidewalk in front of Morelli's house so he could watch the homicide show in comfort. He had a can of soda in one hand and the potato chip bag in the other, and he was kicked back. There were several squad cars parked at angles on the street, plus the medical examiner's meat wagon and a couple other assorted cop cars. A clump of uniforms stood by the meat wagon, talking and laughing. Morelli was on his porch, the front door to his house open behind him. He was talking to Rich Spanner, another homicide cop. Spanner had obviously caught the case. I knew him on a superficial level. He was an okay guy. He was a couple years older than Morelli and built like a barrel. Just minutes ago, they'd carried the victim out in a zippered bag and stuffed him into the ME's truck. The crime lab guy was still inside, working. I was leaning against my car, not wanting to be in the middle of all the police activity inside the house. Rich Spanner and Morelli concluded their conversation. Spanner left, and Morelli walked over to me.
This is a friggin' nightmare, Morelli said.
Did you know the dead guy? He shook his head.
Not personally. His name is Alan Gratelli.
The address on his license was Lawrenceville. Spanner ran him through the system, and he has no priors. He worked for the cable company.
So what's his connection to you?
Dunno. Was he the guy who ran out of the basement the other night?
Could have been. Seemed like the right size, but I couldn't be sure. I don't recognize the name. Did Spanner know him?
No, no one knows him. He's nobody.
Well, somebody knows him because they killed him in your basement.
Let's review my life, Morelli said. I have crazy Dom shooting at me because he thinks I stole this house out from under him. I have his nephew living with me. I'm not sure why, except that he looks a little like me and the kid's mother is missing. And in the last 3 days, I've had my house broken into twice and a guy killed in my basement. Did I miss anything?
Does Mooner count?
No.
Do you suppose there's a connection between all those people? I asked him.
Yeah, I do. And I think it's all related to the bank job. We know that 4 men participated in the robbery. Dom took the fall, and the other 3 men were never identified, and the money was never recovered. I'm guessing when we dig around a little, we'll find out Dom knew Alan Gratelli.
And maybe Gratelli was involved in the robbery.
It would explain the hole in his head, Morelli said.
And maybe the money is hidden in your house.
It was a lot of money. They hauled it off in a van. More likely a key or a clue to the location is hidden in the house.
We need to comb through the house.
Little by little, I've been making this house my own, and I've gotten rid of a bunch of things that belong to Rose. A lot of the clutter has been tossed.
Yes, but a lot of it is still here. You never throw a key away. You still have your locker key from high school. If you found a key, you'd put it in one of your junk drawers. I looked at my watch. I have to get Zook. When I come back, we'll start looking. Chapter 11. Zook settled himself onto the passenger seat and stared down at his shoes. Problems in school? I asked him.
No.
Well? He bit into his lower lip. Your mom hasn't turned up in any of the local hospitals, I told him. That's a good sign.
Or the morgue.
Yeah, or the morgue, I said.
Maybe she took off.
She wouldn't take off without you. She loves you.
Thanks, Zook said. Do you think she's okay?
Yes, I do. I ran into the deli on the way home and picked up lunch meat and chips and ice cream sandwiches. Marion Fitz was working checkout.
I hear you found a dead guy in Morelli's basement, she said. Is this Virginia Baked ham or the low sodium?
Virginia Baked.
I heard it was Alan Gratelli.
That's what I'm told.
Wasn't he dating Loretta Rizzi?
Bang! Direct hit to my brain.
I don't know, I said. Was he? His truck's been in front of her house a lot. Maybe she just had cable problems.
I carried my bag out to my car, tossed it onto the back seat, and got behind the wheel. Zook was hooked into his iPod waiting for me. Was your mom dating a guy named Alan Gratelli? I asked him.
He's Uncle Dom's friend. He come over sometimes to see if we were doing okay. I thought he was sort of a jerk. Sometimes it was like he was trying to put moves on my mom, but she always made a joke about it.
I ran into him today.
Lucky you.
He was in Morelli's basement. Someone shot him. Zook's eyes went wide.
Get out! Was he hurt bad?
Yes.
How bad?
Real bad. I suspect if I was relaying this information to a 14-year-old girl, she would be sad at this point. She'd be remembering pets and relatives and stuffed animals that had been injured, and the tragedies would be commingled in the frontal lobe of her brain. Zook, being a boy, thought it was cool.
Oh, man, Zook said. Is he dead?
Yes. Zook was leaning forward, straining against his seatbelt.
Who shot him?
I don't know. He was dead when I found him.
What did he look like?
He looked dead. Bullet hole in the middle of his forehead.
Whoa, that's amazing. Is he still there?
No, they moved him out. Zook slumped back.
Darn, I miss all the good stuff.
Did your Uncle Dom ever say anything about the money, like where it was hidden?
No, he just kept saying he was going to be living the high life.
Did he have other friends besides Alan Gratelli?
I guess, but I don't know any. Alan was the only one who came around after Uncle Dom went to prison. And Alan just started to come around a couple months ago.
The police were gone when I returned to Morelli's house. Only Mooner in the lawn chair and a single van from an emergency cleaning service suggested something unusual had just occurred.
Zookamundo, Mooner said. Been waiting for you, man. We gotta convene with the wood elves.
Did you see the dead guy? Zook asked.
Yeah, he was real dead, Mooner said. Pooped in his pants and everything.
Awesome, Zook said.
I left Mooner and Zook in the living room with the ice cream sandwiches and the wood elves, and I went to the kitchen to help Morelli. He was methodically going through drawers, extracting keys and odd scraps of paper. The basement door was open, and the smell of bleach and pine-scented detergent drifted up the stairs. Zook tells me Alan Gratelli was friends with Dom, I said to Morelli. Shazam! Morelli grinned and wrapped an arm around me.
I'm gonna get you naked tonight and make you say Shazam again.
I knew that wasn't an empty promise. Having any luck here? I asked him.
I've got a pile of renegade keys, and I now know the problem with our plan. It's not enough to find a key. You have to know where it goes.
My cell phone rang, and I answered to Connie.
I have Brenda back with the film crew, Connie said. They want more footage.
Are you kidding me? They want more monkey?
No, they want a different takedown.
We screwed up a simple domestic disturbance. Where do we go from there?
How about Loretta? She's disappeared, right? That's a violation of a bond agreement.
I can't find Loretta. I have no place to look. I have no clue.
Just lead him around. Make something up. At least no one will shoot at you. And there won't be any monkeys.
I hung up and looked at Morelli. Connie wants me to find Loretta.
Good, Morelli said. I want you to find Loretta, too. Loretta probably knows what's going on. She might even know where the money is located.
I don't know where to begin.
There were four men involved in the robbery. Go on the assumption that Alan Gratelli was one of the men and find the other two. I'm guessing one of them has Loretta.
Why aren't you looking for Loretta?
I'm babysitting her kid. And it seems to me it's more dangerous to stay in this house than to be on the streets. So I'm staying here, and you're hitting the streets.
Okay, fine. Terrific. I'll go find Loretta, but you're gonna owe me...
Shazam, Morelli said.
The bond's office looked like it was holding a casting call for Ho bounty hunters. Lula and Brenda were there, dressed in their leathers, plus Nancy, Mark Bird, and his producer, and the camera crew.
I can't drag everyone around with me, I told them. I need to talk to people, and the camera crew's intimidating. They're gonna have to stay in the van.
Okay, Mark said. We'll wire you for sound, and we'll do recreations.
What's this Loretta like?
Brenda wanted to know.
What did she do?
She robbed a liquor store, I told her.
Was she armed?
Yeah, she had a lightsaber.
A what?
She had her kid's Star Wars lightsaber from Disney World.
But she got a lot of money, right?
Brenda said. Actually, she got a bottle of gin. She needed a Tom Collins.
Been there, done that,
Brenda said. I took the new paperwork from Connie, plus a profile on Alan Gratelli, and we all piled into Lula's Firebird. Lula drove north on 206 past Ryder College to a neighborhood of modest houses. She wound down a couple streets and stopped at a house with a lot of cars parked in the driveway. This was Gratelli's house, and it looked like people were arriving to give their condolences. Problem was, according to Connie's computer check, Gratelli lived alone. He was divorced, no children. His parents were deceased. He had two brothers and one sister. Lula parked on the street, and we walked to the house. The front door was open, and I could hear people yelling at one another inside. Knock, knock, I said, peeking into the house. Two men were shoving each other around. A guy in a cable uniform was ransacking a chest in the hall, and a woman was yelling at the two men.
You dumb shit, the woman said to one of the men. Who cares if he slept with your wife? Your wife is a slut. Everyone slept with your wife. Stop being a jerk and go look for the stupid directions.
What directions? I asked her. Her head snapped around, and she took in Lula and Brenda and me.
Cripes, she said. It's a Rod Squad. I knew Alan was a sicko, but this is ridiculous.
Lula stiffened her spine.
Say what?
You heard he was dead, right? And now you're here on the scavenger hunt? Well, back off, because I was here first, the woman said.
I corralled Lula and Brenda and pulled them aside. Cozy up to the guy in the cable uniform and find out what he's looking for. The woman made a disgusted gesture at the men and flounced off to the kitchen. I tagged along and watched her open and close drawers. Are you his sister? I asked the woman.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I said. This must be a terrible time for you.
We weren't close.
She cut her eyes to me.
Have you known Alan long?
Long enough.
I guess men talk when you're, you know, doing things. Like, what did he say?
She asked me.
Mostly he gave instructions. Really? What sort of instructions? Did he say where it was located?
No, I knew where it was located. He mostly said, hit me harder, and then ouch and yow and that sort of thing.
I don't mean those instructions. I mean, did he tell you where the money is hidden?
Oh, no. Alan was such an idiot. I can't believe he got himself shot. What was he thinking? Do you know who shot him?
I imagine it was someone looking for the money, just like him. Probably crazy Dominic Rizzi.
This is the money from the robbery, right?
I guess. He just kept talking about the money he was going to get when Dom got out of jail. And then Dom got out and nobody could find the money. And then last night, Alan said he had directions, and today, he's dead. I figure I'm next of kin and the money is mine. I just need to find the directions. Me and my two remaining moron brothers.
Doesn't it bother you that Alan was probably killed over the money and you could get killed too?
Do you have any idea how much money we're talking about?
A lot?
More than a lot. We're talking a shitload.
What if you don't find the directions here?
I guess I just start digging around the death house. I figured Dom gave the money to his crazy old Aunt Rose and she hid it somewhere. And then she died before Dom got out of prison.
I left the kitchen, gathered up Lula and Brenda, and herded them outside. What'd you find out? I asked them.
He worked with the dead guy, Lula said. And the dead guy was always talking about the money he was going to get when Rizzi got out of prison. And so this jerk-off figured now that the dead guy's dead, he was going to come look for the money.
That's it?
Yeah.
Did you get his name?
Morty Dill. He was all taken with Brenda here. He would have told us anything.
He reminded me of my fifth husband, Brenda said. Sort of cute the way he kept calling me darling.
I know all about you from Star Magazine, Lula said. I thought your fifth husband was that English guy who got caught with his pants down in the movie theater. You're thinking of your sixth husband, who was a country singer, Kenny Bold.
Are you sure?
There was a guy you married right out of high school, the plumber. Then there was an ice skater who turned out to be gay. The third guy was a stock car driver. Then you remarried the plumber, but that only lasted a couple weeks. And then the English guy.
You're right, Brenda said. I'd forgotten about second marriage to the plumber.
A black Mercedes sedan with tinted windows cruised down the street, stopped in front of the house for a moment, and sped away.
Guess you don't like a crowd, Lula said. My opinion is people going to be coming out of the woodwork to get that robbery money.
Morty said Alan had directions to the money, Brenda said. Morty was looking for the directions.
I looked back at the house. I suppose we should join in the hunt, or at least we should wait around to see if anyone finds the directions. An hour later, everyone cleared out. The house had been searched from top to bottom, and the result was a big zero.
I'm not going to get an Emmy on this episode, Brenda said. This is a huge yawn.
You'd get an Emmy if we found the directions, I told her. Let's just think about this a little. Supposedly, Alan Gratelli had directions to the money, and next thing, he was dead in Morelli's basement. So, if the directions weren't on him and they aren't in his house, where would they be?
In his car, Lula said.
I don't remember seeing his car. It wasn't parked in front of Morelli's house.
If I was doing B&E on a cop's house, I wouldn't park in front of it, Lula said. When we break into some place, we always park around the corner.
Chapter 12. A half hour later, we were back in Morelli's neighborhood. According to Connie's research, Gratelli drove a silver Camry. Lula motored around the block, and sure enough, there was Gratelli's car parked around the corner a block away. Lula pulled in behind it, and we all got out and looked into the Camry. There was a briefcase on the back seat. The cameraman panned across the car and went in for a close-up.
There it is, Brenda whispered into her mic. There's a briefcase with the directions to millions of stolen dollars.
We tried the doors. Locked.
No problemo, Lula said.
She opened her trunk and removed a slim metal tool. She rammed the tool into the doorframe and popped the lock.
It's not like I steal cars or anything, Lula said, but a girl needs to be prepared. A girl's got to have skills, you see what I'm saying?
I took the briefcase from the car and set it on the hood. It was a Samsonite hard-side attaché case, the kind gorillas can jump on and not make a dent. I released the two locks and everyone crowded close together, excited to see if the directions were inside. I lifted the lid and bang! Blue dye exploded out of the attaché case. No one moved. No one spoke. No one blinked. We all just stood there, dripping blue dye.
What happened?
Brenda wanted to know.
Am I okay? Was it a bomb?
I looked at the dye on my hands and shirt. Gritelli booby-trapped his briefcase.
He's lucky he's dead, Lula said. I'm wearing leather. Somebody's got to be responsible for this dry cleaning bill.
The cameraman looked at his blue lens.
I'm done for the day.
I closed the attaché case and snatched it off the hood of Gritelli's car. I'm taking this with me. I'll give it to Morelli to check out.
It's in my hair, isn't it?
Brenda asked.
I feel so funky.
She looked down at herself.
I have blue boobies.
Lula carefully eased herself into the Firebird and drove away. Brenda and the camera crew took off in the van, and I walked to Morelli's house. Mooner answered the door.
Far out, he said. Off the chain.
I had no idea what off the chain meant, and I didn't care. I was blue. I walked through the living room, and Zook never looked up from the computer screen. I got to the kitchen where Morelli was stirring a pot of spaghetti sauce, and I dropped the attaché case onto the kitchen table. Morelli gaped at me with the spoon in his hand.
What the hell happened to you?
Booby-trapped attaché case.
Have you seen yourself?
No. Is it bad?
How do you feel about blue?
I stepped into the powder room, switched the light on, and stifled a sob. Blue hair, blue eyebrows, blue eyelashes, blue lips, blue face. I soaked a hand towel and dabbed at my cheek. Nothing happened. Morelli was behind me, smiling.
You look like a smurf. I think I'm getting turned on.
Everything turns you on.
Not everything. Remember the time you fell off the fire escape and rolled in the dog diarrhea?
I took the briefcase out of Gritelli's car. There's a chance it contains directions for finding the money from the robbery. Morelli went to the attaché case and flipped the locks.
Guess I don't have to worry about a dye bomb,
he said. He raised the lid and looked inside. Everything was soaked in blue dye.
Gritelli didn't get the memo telling him to put his important papers in plastic pouches, Morelli said. If there were directions in here, they're gone.
I got a spoon out of the silverware drawer and tasted the spaghetti sauce. Yum, I said.
It needs to simmer, Morelli said. I like to let the sausage soak in the gravy. It's for tomorrow. We're supposed to have dinner at your parents' house tonight.
I put the spoon in the dishwasher. I bet I know where the money is hidden. I bet it's in your basement.
I've looked in the basement.
I bet it's buried. I bet it's under your floor.
That floor is poured concrete.
And? Morelli partially covered his sauce.
I'm not going to take a jackhammer to my basement floor.
We trooped downstairs and stared at the floor. It had just been professionally steam-cleaned to remove the bloodstains. This is an old house, I said. The floor down here looks pretty new.
I had it put in 2 years ago. It used to be dirt.
Oh, my God!
I'm going to forget we had this conversation, Morelli said. I don't care if there's a fortune buried here. It's not like the money would be mine. It's bank money.
The bank would be happy to see it.
The bank would think it was a pain in the ass. They've already collected the insurance.
What about the insurance company?
Screw the insurance company, Morelli said.
You would let $9 million sit under this concrete?
Yeah.
He towed the concrete.
I like my floor. The guys did a good job on it. It's nice and smooth.
If we got married and you died, I'd have this floor up before your body got cold.
As long as you don't slit my throat while I'm sleeping.
He looked down at me.
You wouldn't, would you?
Not for money. A half hour later, I was fresh out of the shower, and I was still blue. I got dressed in a clean t-shirt and a pair of Morelli sweats, and I padded downstairs. Help, I said to Morelli.
I have some turpentine in the garage, he said. Maybe that'll work.
He opened his back door to go to the garage, and there were two people digging in his yard. They looked up and saw Morelli and took off, leaving their shovels behind.
Anyone you know?
Morelli asked me. Nope. My cell phone rang. It was Grandma Mazur, and she was excited.
I just saw you on television, she said.
You were on the early evening news. They were doing a report on the murder in Morelli's basement, and they said it was believed it was tied to that bank robbery that happened years ago. And then there was this part where Brenda found a briefcase in the dead man's car, and it had directions about where the money was buried. And some lady said she was pretty sure Dominic Rizzi gave the money to his Aunt Rose, and Rose hid it somewhere before she died. Just think, Morelli could have hidden treasure in his backyard.
I glanced out the kitchen window at the hole the two diggers had started. And they said all that on television?
Yep, it was a pip of a report.
I hung up and passed the news on to Morelli.
There might be money buried in my basement, Morelli said, but I'm pretty sure the only thing anyone is going to find in my yard has been left there by Bob.
Morelli jogged across his backyard to his garage and returned with a small can of turpentine. We dabbed it on my hand and rubbed, and nothing happened.
I'll call the crime lab and see if they have a suggestion, Morelli said.
The doorbell rang and Mooner answered.
It's some dude named Gary, Mooner yelled at me. He says he's a stalker.
I went to the door, and Gary tried hard not to notice I was blue. He looked at his feet, and he looked above my head, and he cleared his throat. It's okay, I said. I know I'm blue.
It caught me by surprise, he said. I didn't want to seem rude.
Just so you know, Brenda is blue, too.
Is this some art thing?
No, it was an accident. What's up?
I had the toilet dream again, only this time a bull came charging down the southbound lane right at Brenda.
Jeez, what happened then?
I woke up.
His attention shifted to Mooner and Zook.
Are they playing Minion Fire? What's their PC?
Zook and Moondog.
Are you kidding me? They're famous. Zook is like a god. He's a blab old wizard.
Gary inched his way in and stood behind the couch, watching over Zook's shoulder.
Feel the power, Gary said. The dragon's coming. There he is, there he is. Go arcane.
Zook turned and looked at him.
How did you know the dragon was coming?
Ever since I got hit by lightning, things happen in my head before they happen on the screen. It's like I'm a step ahead of Cable, and I'm way faster in dial-up.
Whoa,
Zook and Mooner said, eyes glued to Gary. Zook looked over at me.
You're blue.
It's a long story.
Who's your PC? Mooner asked Gary.
I haven't got one. I just lurk. I thought it wasn't fair for me to play with a lightning advantage.
Far out, Mooner said. A dude with honor.
Morelli ambled in.
We need to go to your parents now.
He checked out Gary.
Is this a stalker?
Gary extended his hand.
Pleased to meet you, he said to Morelli.
Everyone sign off, I said. We're going to my parents' house for dinner. My grandmother opened the door and we all marched in. Zook, Mooner, Gary, Morelli, me, and Bob.
You better set more plates, Grandma yelled to my mother in the kitchen. We got a group!
My father was in the living room, dozing in front of the television. He picked his head up and looked at everyone standing in the foyer. He mumbled something that sounded a little like,
"Friggin' mutants,"
and went back to napping. Bob bounced around doing his happy dance.
Isn't he something? Grandma said.
She patted his head, and Bob took off for the kitchen. A moment later, my mother shrieked, and Bob bounded out of the kitchen and streaked through the dining room with a ham firmly clenched in his mouth. He skidded to a stop in front of my father and dropped the ham. My grandmother ran in and scooped the ham up off the floor.
30-second rule in effect,
my grandmother said, returning the ham to the kitchen. There was the sound of water running, and moments later, my grandmother reappeared with the ham on a plate.
Dinner's ready, she said. Everyone sit.
We dragged extra chairs to the table, and I shuffled plates and silverware around. Bob took his place under the table, ever on guard for food to fall out of someone's mouth, onto the rug. My mother brought in creamed corn, green beans with bacon, and mashed potatoes. She got to the table, looked at me, and her mouth dropped open.
Booby-trapped attaché case, I said. No big deal.
She set the side dishes on the table and made the sign of the cross.
Dear God,
she said, and she returned to the kitchen. I heard the cabinet door creak open, and moments later, my mother returned with a glass of whiskey.
Isn't this nice, my grandmother said. It feels like a party. We even got the stalker here.
My mother tossed some whiskey down her throat.
Stalker,
my father said, mashed potato bowl in hand.
Yep, Grandma said. He's a genuine stalker. He's even got a restraining order against him.
My father considered that for a beat and went back to filling his plate. Clearly, he didn't find a stalker to be especially interesting. Now, if Gary had been a cross-dresser, my father would have had something to work with.
So how's the treasure hunt going? Grandma asked Morelli. Did you find all that money yet?
This got everyone's attention. My mother had a grip on her whiskey glass.
What money?
I guess I'm the only one who watches television, Grandma said. The early news ran a piece on the dead guy in Morelli's basement.
Why don't I know about this? My mother asked.
I guess I forgot to tell you, being that I was so busy answering all the phone calls, Grandma said.
You didn't kill him, did you?
My mother asked me.
No, I just discovered the body.
The dead guy's name was Alan Gratelli, Grandma said. Stephanie broke into his car and found his suitcase, and that's how she got blue. And it turns out Alan Gratelli and Dominic Rizzi were friends, and the television reporter said Alan Gratelli was in Morelli's basement looking for all that money that was never recovered from the robbery. $9 million. And Joseph's Aunt Rose, rest in peace, hid it somewhere, and now everyone's looking for it.
Sweet, Mooner said. You could get high-def TiVo with $9 million.
I could get a lawyer for my mom, Zook said.
I could get a sports car, Grandma said.
You don't have a driver's license, my mother told her.
I could get a driver, Grandma said. A hot one.
My father had his head down, shoveling in ham. My father would like to see the hot driver deliver Grandma Mazur to the old people's home in Hamilton Township.
Maybe I could find the money, Gary said. I could divine it.
Dude, Mooner said, that would be awesome. Can you, like, really do that?
I found a chicken salad sandwich once. I found it in my sock drawer, Gary said.
Badass, Mooner said. Wicked cool.
What are you doing now? Grandma asked Mooner. Are you still involved in the pharmaceutical industry?
I mostly gave that up. I was getting stiff competition from the Russians. I've been reviewing my options, and I thought I might open a Japanese tea house. Either that or a nudie bar.
My father picked his head up.
Don't you need money to open a nudie bar? Yeah, dude, isn't that a bummer? Where's the justice? I mean, where's the incentive for the little businessman?
I think you should open a nudie bar for women, Grandma said. There's lots of bars for men where they can see naked women, but there's no place us women can go to see ding-dongs.
I dig it, Mooner said. You want private parts parody. Far out.
My mother chugged the rest of her whiskey. Morelli was slouched back in his chair, taking it all in. He draped an arm across my shoulder and whispered into my ear,
"Do women really want to see ding-dongs?"
"Yeah," I said, "as long as they don't have to touch them."
"Is it sexual?"
"No, morbid curiosity."
"How about mine?"
he asked. "Yours is definitely sexual and touchable." He nuzzled my neck.
"Can we go home now?"
"No."
"Why not?"
"We haven't had dessert. And besides, I feel funny shazamming with Zook in the house."
"We could shazam in the garage."
"I don't think so."
"The SUV?"
"No."
"I'm becoming more motivated to find Loretta,"
Morelli said.
Chapter 13. It was a little after 8 when Morelli pulled to the curb in front of his house. A small crowd was gathered on the sidewalk watching two men dig in Morelli's tiny front yard. Morelli got out of his car and joined the onlookers.
"Excuse me," Morelli said to the guys digging. "What are you doing?"
"Digging," the one guy said.
"This is private property," Morelli said.
"What?"
"Private property."
"I think there's something about digging," the guy said. "Like, people only own the top of the property?"
"I think you're wrong," Morelli said.
The guy kept digging. "And why would I give a rat's ass what you think?"
"Because I own this house, and if you don't stop digging, I'm gonna have you arrested for destruction of personal property."
"Look at me, I'm so scared," the guy said. "Call the cops! Call the cops on me!"
Morelli badged him.
"I am the cops."
The guy looked at Morelli's badge.
"Oh, sorry."
Everyone dispersed after that, and Morelli, Zook, Mooner, Gary, and I trooped into the house.
Morelli walked straight through and swore when he looked out his back window. His backyard was filled with people digging, and his garage door was open.
"This is unbelievable," Morelli said. "Dude," Mooner said, "you should sell tickets. Like, it would be $100 to dig for a half hour. We could be, like, rich, dude."
Morelli walked out his back door, unholstered his gun, fired a shot into the ground, and the diggers scattered like roaches when the light goes on. He crossed the yard to his garage and returned with a roll of yellow crime scene tape. "Do you think that's going to help?" I asked him.
"It's worth a try."
10 minutes later, Morelli's entire property was behind the yellow tape. Zook, Mooner, and Gary were in the living room making deals with the wood elves, while Morelli and I were sitting on the back stoop, watching Bob sniff around the holes in his yard.
"I'm going to have to jackhammer my basement," Morelli said. "This isn't going to stop until we find the money."
"If we found the money, Loretta might even turn up."
"I wouldn't count on it. I think Dom did the time and figured he didn't owe his partners anything. Problem was, for whatever reason, Dom couldn't put his hands on the money right away."
"Maybe because it was buried in Rose's basement, and you came along and inherited the house and poured concrete down there."
"Yeah, and it keeps getting worse. Dom's nephew is living in this house, so he can't just blow it up. And, thanks to the early news, half of Trenton is on a $9 million scavenger hunt."
"And Loretta?"
"I'm guessing Loretta is being held hostage by one or both of the partners until Dom forks over the money. I'd feel a lot better if we could get to her before the money is found. There's no guarantee she won't be disposed of the instant she's no longer useful."
"We need to get Dom," I said. "He can take us to the other two partners."
"Any ideas?"
"I'm sure he's worried about his nephew. He hates the thought that Zook is with you. Plus, he wants him away from this house. And maybe he's thinking there's a possibility that whoever has Loretta will decide to hedge his bets and snatch Zook, too. So I think Dom isn't far away. I think he's keeping his eye on the house and on Zook. He's only been out of jail for a week, and he doesn't have a job. We know he hasn't got a lot of money."
"He has a gun," Morelli said.
"True, and a car."
"The car he was driving belongs to his mother. We found it abandoned."
"Where's he sleeping? Is he sneaking back into his mother's house?"
"No, we've been doing random checks," Morelli said.
"It's warm enough to sleep outdoors. Just another street person if he migrated downtown."
"Yeah, but he has a rifle. It would make him conspicuous if he carried it with him."
Bob was digging in one of the holes. He had his head below ground level, and dirt was flying between his hind legs. "I think Dom's in the neighborhood waiting for a chance to get into the house," I said. "So maybe we can set a trap. Make it look like no one's home, but you could be in a closet or something waiting to jump out and capture Dom."
"Gee, that sounds like lots of fun."
"You have a better plan?" Morelli blew out a sigh.
"No."
Morelli woke me up out of a sound sleep.
"Did you hear that?" he whispered.
"I was sleeping. I didn't hear anything."
"Shh," he said. "Listen."
It was warm and the windows were open. The white gauzy curtains still left from Aunt Rose moved on a gentle breeze.
"There," he said. "Did you hear it?"
"It sounds like someone's digging."
"What does it take to discourage these idiots?"
"I don't know, but I don't care if they're digging. Go back to sleep."
"I can't go to sleep," Morelli said. "This is making me nuts."
He rolled out of bed and moved toward the door. "Where are you going?"
"I'm gonna shoot the digger."
"That's not a good idea, not to mention you're naked."
"The digger won't care. He'll be concentrating on his bullet hole."
"You needed a new lawn anyway," I said to him. "Think of this as soil preparation." He found a pair of boxers and pulled them on.
"How's this? Does this meet your dress code for shooting trespassers?"
I dragged myself out of bed and grabbed some clothes off the floor. "Let's at least see who's out there before you shoot them. If we're lucky, it'll be Dom. Do you have a flashlight?"
"In the kitchen."
We padded downstairs and tiptoed through the dark house. I found the flashlight and Morelli had his Glock in hand. We stood in the pitch-black kitchen and looked out the window. Someone was clearly digging in the backyard, but it was too dark to see much of anything.
"Okay," Morelli said. "On the count of three, I'm going to open the door, and you shine the flashlight on this bastard. 1, 2, 3!
Morelli yanked the back door open, and I hit the button on the flashlight and caught the digger in the act.
"Good God," Morelli said.
It was Grandma Mazur.
"Howdy," Grandma said. "Hope I didn't wake you." Of course you woke us, I said. It's 2 a.m. What the heck are you doing?
I felt lucky, Grandma said.
I don't think the money is buried in the backyard,
Morelli told her.
That's okay, she said. I still feel lucky. It isn't every day I get to see a man in his underwear.
How did you get here? I asked her.
I drove the Buick.
You're not supposed to drive, I told her.
I'm old. I've got rights, she said.
That could be true, but Grandma Mazur was the worst driver ever. She knew only one speed, foot to the floor. I'll drive Grandma home, I said to Morelli. I dropped Grandma off at the door and locked the Buick up in my father's garage. Morelli was waiting curbside in the SUV when I got to the front of my parents' house. I slid onto the passenger seat and looked over at him. He was only wearing the boxers.
I thought you might have changed your mind about the SUV, Morelli said.
I checked out his underwear, which was imprinted with pictures of bunnies. Where did you get those shorts? I asked.
Walmart. They came in a pack.
I blew out a sigh. Morelli was irresistible in his bunny boxers. I haven't changed my mind about the SUV, but I've changed my mind about your bedroom. Morelli is at his best on a Saturday morning. His body temperature is a little higher, and his blood pressure is a little lower than on a Monday. Everything about him is a little softer, a little more sensual. He was at the kitchen table in faded navy sweatpants and a matching sweatshirt that had the sleeves cut short. I suspected he was commando under the sweatpants. He'd showered, but he hadn't shaved, and he looked like he could give a dead woman an orgasm. He glanced up from his paper and smiled at me.
Shazam.
I smiled back at him. It had been a multiple Shazam morning. I sipped my coffee. What's going on today?
I'm getting someone to demo the basement floor, and I'm going door to door looking for Dom. I think you're right. He's nearby.
It was a little after 8, and Zook was still sleeping. Mooner and Gary hadn't yet appeared on Morelli's front doorstep. The sound of car doors slamming shut and people talking carried in from Morelli's backyard.
It's Saturday morning, Morelli said. Don't these people take a day off?
I peeked out the window. Brenda's in the yard with the film crew. Morelli took his coffee to the door and stepped out.
Hello, Brenda said, eyeballing Morelli. You are hot. Hold me back.
Morelli turned and looked at me.
Is she for real?
Yes, and you want to keep arm's distance or she'll give you a pat down.
You're trespassing on private property, Morelli said. And you've ignored the crime scene tape.
We didn't ignore it, the cameraman said. We got a real good shot of it.
Brenda was in another black leather outfit. She was wearing 4-inch spike-heeled shoes, and her hair and her face and her chest were blue. She had a handheld mic, and she was having a hard time navigating because her heels were sinking into the freshly dug dirt. She climbed onto a dirt mound and looked down into the hole. The cameraman focused on Brenda.
Here we are at Aunt Rose's house, Brenda said to the camera. And as you can see, digging for the stolen money has already begun.
Excuse me, Morelli said. You're going to have to leave.
Brenda stumbled over to Morelli with the mic.
Are you by any chance the handsome owner of the property?
That's it, Morelli said. I've had enough.
He set his coffee cup on the stoop, reached over the railing, grabbed the garden hose, and turned it on Brenda and the cameraman. Brenda hit high C at the first blast of water.
Eee! She shrieked. Damn it, shit, son of a bitch!
The dirt instantly turned to mud, and Brenda lost her footing and went down. The sound guy rushed in to help, and he went down too. Maybe you want to turn the hose off, I said to Morelli. Brenda had one shoe on and one shoe in her hand.
What is your problem? She yelled at Morelli. Do you know who I am? I'm Brenda. I'm doing the news here, and the news is sacred, for crap's sake. You can't turn the hose on the news, you moron!
Morelli shut the water off and retrieved his coffee cup.
This is going to be another one of those days, he said.
We backed into the house, closed and locked the door, and pulled all the shades down. Morelli stood in the middle of his kitchen.
I hate this, he said. I hate bringing this shit into my home.
We need to find Dom. Morelli nodded agreement.
I'm going to change my clothes and canvas the neighborhood.
We'll split it in half. Morelli smiled down at me.
Nice offer, Cupcake, but you're blue. You'll scare the crap out of everyone.
I forgot.
Stay here with Zook. Keep people out of my yard. Get some estimates on jackhammer rentals.
Morelli went upstairs, and I crept to the window and looked out. No Brenda, no cameraman, no film crew van. I went to the front of the house. No one was there, either. Good deal. Bob was sleeping in a patch of sun in the living room. He was still spray-painted. He didn't seem to care. While I was standing looking out the window, Lula's red Firebird slid to a stop in front of Morelli's house. Lula hoisted herself out of the car and marched to Morelli's front door. "Hey," I said, opening the door to her. "What's up?"
"I need you to help me with my prenup. I got a lawyer appointment this afternoon, and I gotta have this ready."
"I don't know anything about prenups."
"You just gotta help me make out my list. I'm supposed to list all my assets, and then Tank lists all his assets, and we got what we got."
"So Tank is doing this too?"
"I left a message on his phone. I said if you got anything you want to keep, you better list it out or I could get it in case of divorce. Not that I intend to get a divorce, but I guess you never know, right?"
"Right.
Do you think Tank and me would ever get divorced?"
"I'm still struggling with you and Tank getting married."
"Huh," Lula said. "Anyways, I got this list. You want to hear it?"
"Sure."
"I got a television, a DVD player, a cable box."
Lula cut her eyes to me.
"I hate those cable fuckers."
"Everybody hates them."
"I got my Firebird, my Glock, a fur coat that's almost mink, a clock radio, a whip."
"Wait a minute, you have a whip?"
"Don't everyone?"
"I don't have a whip."
"Huh.
What do you do with the whip? What does it look like? Is it one of those long black ones like Zorro uses?"
"No," Lula said. "It's a kind of jockey uses. It's for bad boys."
"Ew."
"Okay, if you're going to be squeamish about it, I'll skip over my collection of professional experience enhancement tools. I never used a whip anyway. It went with a Halloween outfit."
Morelli came down the stairs in jeans and running shoes and a sweatshirt over a t-shirt.
"What's up?" he said to Lula. "I see you're a member of the Blue Girl Group."
"Blue isn't my best color," Lula said.
Morelli grabbed me and kissed me and went off to do his cop thing.
"He looks like he got some last night," Lula said. "Where's he going?"
"He thinks Dom is somewhere in the neighborhood. He's going to look around."
"How come you're not helping him?"
"I'm Blue."
"Oh, yeah, I forgot. I'm starting to get used to it."
"And someone has to stay here with Zook. I don't want to leave him in the house alone."
"I could babysit him," Lula said. "I'm taking the morning to put my prenup in order. I could just as lief do it here."
"I'd really like to go back to my apartment and check on Rex and get some clothes."
"Go for it," Lula said.
I ran upstairs and knocked on Zook's door.
"Yeah,"
he said. A moment later, he was at the door, looking almost awake. "I have to go back to my apartment for an hour or so. Morelli is working, so Lula is going to stay here with you."
"No way. She scares the crap out of me."
"You'll be fine as long as you don't tell her she's fat. And you might want to avoid mentioning the blue dye."
"I'm not going out of my room."
"That would be okay, too." I grabbed my purse and ran downstairs. "Don't let anyone dig in the yard," I told Lula. "Morelli takes it personally. And Zook is a good kid, but it would be great if he didn't paint anything."
"I'm on it. You can count on me. Do you think I should list shoes in the prenup?"
"Do you and Tank wear the same size?"
"No."
"Then probably your shoes are safe." My apartment isn't that far from Morelli's house. Too far to walk, but fast to drive. I park the Zook car, bypass the elevator for the stairs, and let myself into my apartment. I tapped on Rex's cage, and he peeked out at me. I dropped a baby carrot and a piece of cheese into his food dish and gave him fresh water. I stuffed clean jeans and a couple shirts into a tote bag. I didn't need much, just enough to get me through a couple more days while we straightened out the Zook arrangements. I took one last look at myself in my bathroom mirror. I wanted to believe that the blue was fading, but truth is, it wasn't. I was hideously blue. I was like Dom, conspicuous. A bunch of people were looking for Dom, and Dom didn't want to be found. And Dom didn't have the luxury of taking off for Rio. Dom had to hang close. Dom had his own agenda. So let's step into Dom's shoes. I'm ultra-recognizable, and I'm confined to a small area. How would I move around? In disguise or at night? Second problem. I have no money. So either I mooch from someone I trust, or else I hold up a convenience store. I'm going to guess he's mooching. I called Connie. Would you run a personal history on Dom for me?
What do you want to know?
Where was he living when he was sent to prison?
That's easy. He owned a house on Vine Street. When he was sentenced, his wife divorced him and got the house. So far as I know, she's still living there and has remarried.
I got the house number from Connie and hung up. I'd forgotten about the ex-wife. This was great. Ex-wives loved ratting on their ex-husbands. The Vine Street house was a small single-family cape with a detached single-car garage. It had a green Subaru sitting in the driveway. I parked and knocked on the front door. A woman answered and gasped when she saw me. "Sorry," I said. "I know I'm blue. I had an accident with some dye."
"I know who you are," she said. "You're Stephanie Plum. There was a piece on you on the late news last night. They said you were involved in the robbery treasure hunt and you and Brenda got sprayed with blue dye. Do you really know Brenda?"
"Yes."
"What's she like?"
"She's like Brenda. Could I ask you some questions about Dom?"
"Sure, but I don't know much about him anymore. I haven't seen him since he got out."
"I'm interested in the guys he used to hang with."
"Mostly they were from his old neighborhood. Victor Raguzzo, Benny Stoli, Jelly Cantner, and the guy who was shot, Alan Gratelli. Alan and Dom worked together."
"Did you think any of those guys pulled the job with him?"
"I could see Alan doing it. Victor, Benny, and Jelly? No."
"Dom's hiding out somewhere. Do you have any ideas?"
"He's not with his mom?"
"No."
"Jelly would be dumb enough to take him in. Or maybe he's still seeing Peggy Bargalowski. That's why I divorced him. I found out he was spending a lot of time at Peggy's house."
I gave her my card and told her to call me if she saw Dom. I drove around the corner, pulled to the curb, and got addresses from Connie. Jelly was living in a second-floor apartment 2 blocks from Dom's mother's house. Peggy was in Cleveland. I wanted to do a drive-by on Jelly's house, but I was too obvious in the Zook car. There was a car wash minutes away on the corner of Hammond and Baker, but I didn't want to put up with a car wash crew and their comments on my blueness. I know that's chicken shit of me. What can I say? I'm blue and I'm feeling fragile. I drove back to Morelli's house, thinking I'd check on Lula and trade my Zookmobile for Morelli's SUV. I let myself into the house and couldn't find anyone. Mooner's laptop was on the coffee table beside Zook's, but there was no Mooner or Zook. I walked to the back of the house and looked out. Mooner and Zook were digging in the backyard with Bob. Lula was standing guard with her gun drawn. A small crowd had formed on the perimeter of the crime scene tape. Gary was sitting on the stoop watching.
"What the heck is this?" I asked Lula.
"We figured it wouldn't hurt to look. There's still some undisturbed ground here. And if we find it, we'll share it with Morelli."
"Are you insane? If you find it, you'll hand it over to the authorities. You're looking for stolen money."
"Huh," Lula said. "You sure got a stick up your ass. Where did you get so play by the book?"
"I've always been play by the book. You're the one who doesn't play by the book."
"Well, I knew it was one of us."
"Anyway, I don't think the money is buried in the backyard."
"Me either," Gary said. "I'm not seeing anything. I told them it was a waste of time, but no one would listen."
"Yeah, but you might be a nut," Lula said.
"Hey," I yelled at Zook and Mooner, "stop digging. The money isn't in the backyard."
A murmur went up from the people pressed against the crime scene tape. 2 of them had shovels.
"It isn't in the front yard either," I told everyone. "Go home."
Mooner, Zook, Bob, Gary, Lula, and I left the yard and huddled in the kitchen. I gave everyone an ice cream sandwich, except Bob. Bob got a slice of ham.
"How come you think the money isn't in the yard?" Lula wanted to know.
"People wouldn't be breaking into Morelli's house if the money was in the yard. The only people digging in the yard are idiots who saw Brenda on television."
Lula peeled the wrapper off her ice cream.
"So you think the money's in the house?"
"I'm not sure there is any money. I suspect it was here at one time, but Dom was in prison for almost 10 years, and there were a lot of changes. Rose died. Morelli moved into the house. Things were thrown away. Rooms were renovated. For all we know, Rose could have found the money and given it to the church."
"I don't think so," Gary said. "I'm getting a sharp pain in my forehead."
"It's the ice cream," I told him. "You're getting a brain freeze."
I herded everyone into the living room and found some Saturday morning cartoons on television.
"I need to go out again, but I'll be back by noon."
I found the keys to Morelli's car and left my keys in their place. I drove to Jelly's house and idled across the street. It was a small 2-story house that had been converted into 2 apartments. There was only 1 front door, so I assumed the owner had made a small foyer with 2 inner doors. I looked up to the 2nd floor. 4 windows going across.
The shades had been raised on all four windows. It would be easier to snoop if Jelly lived on the ground floor. I drove around the block. Sometimes older neighborhoods in Trenton have alleys intersecting the blocks. This block wasn't divided by an alley. I parked around the corner, walked to Jelly's house, and tried the front door. Ordinarily, if you look like you belong somewhere, no one pays attention. Unfortunately, I was blue, and I looked like I belonged in some distant galaxy. The front door was unlocked, so I stepped inside. Just as I'd thought, there was a small foyer. The door to my left led to the ground floor apartment. The door directly in front of me led upstairs. I rang the bell. No answer. I rang again. Nothing. I tried the doorknob. Locked. I looked under the mat. No key. I felt the top of the door jam. Eureka! A key. I plugged the key into the lock. The door clicked open and I stepped inside. I closed the door and stood listening, hearing nothing but quiet. I crept up the stairs and cautiously peeked into the apartment. Living room with a galley kitchen at one end. A small hall leading to a bedroom and a bathroom. Dirty dishes in the sink. A cereal box on the counter. A pillow on the couch in front of the small television. An open, half-empty bag of chips on the coffee table. I moved to the bathroom. Not clean. Two toothbrushes, two razors, towels on the floor. Toilet lit up. Ick. The door was open to the bedroom. Bed unmade. Sheets looked like they'd been on there since Christmas. Socks and underwear on the floor. Top bureau drawer open. Big mess. I thought there was a good chance Dom was crashing here. I was tempted to do a more thorough search, but I wasn't sure what it would produce. And the longer I lingered, the better my chance of getting caught in the act. I decided to sneak out and do a background search on Jelly and turn the whole mess over to Morelli. I walked out of the bedroom into the short hallway, and I heard the door open and close at the foot of the stairs. Instant panic.